Happy Odin's Day to you, kind
of. Happy Odin's Day. May the should one... have Odin on for a guest one day.
Yeah. I think the one-eyed god
if we could find him.
would be a wonderful guest. Maybe he could teach us rune magics.
Ooh, now that would be good.
Yes.
I think we could probably even sell that episode.
Yeah, behind it. We could just put all this content behind a paywall. Ka-ching, ka-ching. Odin be praised. By the roots of Yggdrasil, may it be so. well, you know, we should probably introduce ourselves and start meandering towards apocalypse.
Yes.
I'm Ash Van Steenwyck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. And just in case there's random people watching, this is my first day kind of full feminine in my how I express things. And so if you're confused, just go to Ash Van Steenwyck's Facebook page and read the last 10 posts. And it all makes sense. Not all of it. It'll actually could make less sense to you, but I don't want to talk about it too much here. But anyways, that's me.
Yeah. And I'm Daniel Walpert. I direct the Minnesota Institute of Mission Healing, or MICA. And I think you look great today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a lot more work to get dressed than it did yesterday.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure. You know, it's funny because so I kind of came up in, you know, the hippie world where at the time.
This is a little hippie looking.
Well, yeah, it is. Well, and so, you know, we did a lot of, and I think I mentioned this before, you know, makeup and dressing differently and all of that. But it was usually for different occasions or, you know, certain things. And it definitely wasn't the, you know, day-to-day heavy-duty makeup thing. And then I got this roommate at one point that was this woman that was really into, you know, like not going out of the house without her face on.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I'd never lived around anybody that did that. And it was unbelievable the amount of time that it took. I mean, she was getting up like a full hour early to work on this. And I was just like, wow, I don't know that I could do that.
Yep.
That's a lot.
I wouldn't say it takes me an hour. This takes me about a good 25, 30 minutes,
yeah,
which is a lot. But part of it's because I'm trying to figure out how to blend, like cover my stubble, and eventually electrolysis will take care of that. That's the hardest thing for me to deal with.
Hey, so this is...
If I wore one of those veils, like in those really crappy movies where men dressed up as women to try to like,
wow,
spy on someone, and they wore the thing, and but their eyes were beautiful. I feel like I got a little bit of that going. These eyes sparkle.
Well, but this is a great use for masks.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and then there's a tie-in with veil, unveil, apocalypse.
Ooh,
there's a tie-in.
Way to go to bring everything around. That was nice.
I'm the the deity of the great segue. Praise be Odin. People are saying good morning, CK. Good morning, Kathleen. And saying good morning to everyone in Internetland. That's like millions of people.
Yes.
Scott,
right.
David, Ellen. Good morning to everyone and everyone else who's listening.
And so we're talking about this kind of sluggish apocalypse that we've named it, but basically the idea that, you know, things already have really changed, right? That somehow we often have this idea about apocalypse that, you know, it's, as I mentioned on Monday, it's like this rapture idea, like boom, you know, it happens right now in a second. A certain number of people disappear, And you know, honestly, like if all the crazy fundies just vanished in a second, like that could be awesome.
I mean, that would help out.
That would help a lot. And you know, and then everything is different on Earth. But it is seeming clearer and clearer that, of course, that's not the way things are. That's pretty much never how things happen, particularly within biological and social systems, right? But that we have really entered into kind of this new realm. And underneath the announcement for today's episode, I had just seen this, I think it's a tweet that somebody had made that really gets at this, which is basically like, all right, now COVID and the pandemic, and I would say that we could add climate change, are now just being added to the list of the other social, economic, really shitty things that we already put up with day to day, right? School shootings, no healthcare, you know, all of these kinds of issues, you know, predatory student loans, whatever it is that, and really the apocalypse is more like that perhaps overused image of boiling the frog, right? That
yeah.
It's like the water's just getting hotter and hotter. We're adding more and more things to the list. And then, you know, one day we wake up and we're just like, oh my God, how did we get here?
Yeah. So, I mean, this, it raises all sorts of questions about like, well, because the first thing that people do when they hear stuff like this is one, they get overwhelmed. Two, they're like, what am I supposed to do about it?
Right.
How do that's it? Usually there's the people like, well, what do you do about it? And that as though like there's just a quick and easy answer to that. And which is what people want. This is why idea of like, you know, I came up when the Left Behind series was just starting out. And before that, we had the Thief in the Night videos that people would watch in youth group and DC Talk in the early 90s saying, I wish we'd all been ready. About the rapture coming, and this like so I you know, and it's like wow,
really, that's like the ultimate bummer thought, right? After the rapture, you think, man, I wish I'd been ready.
Yeah, there's no time to change your mind. The sun has come, and you've been left behind. There we go. Good music,
nice
from my youth. But there's no easy solution. Like that's the conservative side of things. Like, don't worry. You'll get zapped away if you're good. It's like some sort of reverse Santa Claus where Santa Claus doesn't leave presents. He takes you as a present. And then everyone else is just left in a hellscape.
You are the present.
Jesus. And then, but then there's the lefty versions of it. Like, well, you know what? Marx predicted there's this new series coming out called Foundation. It's an Isaac Asimov adaptation. And part of the whole premise, it's coming on Apple Plus.
Awesome.
It's coming out this week. And part of the premise is there's this psychological, sociological mathematician who can predict what's going to happen for the next 1,000 years. And so he tries to move things in that direction. And I think a lot of people lefties will look at Marx that way, that it's like, look, the socialism thing's kind of inevitable. We just got to sit back. And they kind of like downplay the crisis moment we're in. And then, of course, there's other lefties. It's just, we just got to try harder. Then they get the contemplatives. It's like centering prayer. Do that daily and you'll change yourself and the world like this. And I'm like, well, you know, there's some truth there, but there's too much. There can be naivete in any of these things. And then what's left is just watching cat memes and embracing nihilism. Like, I mean...
Yeah,
which is that's actually a whole type of content of nihilistic memes with Ken.
Oh yeah, yeah,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, yep. All right, we got a couple comments in already, which is great.
Michelle's saying hi. CK writes, "How much of this apocalypse is by design? It's the powers and control of world events, and what is the end game outcome?" I don't know. Like, I feel like the exploitation stuff is by design. And then I don't know if they want things to be a hellscape. It's just the unavoidable, like, downside of their thing. And they're, like, just playing with their house of cards, trying to extract as much for them and live as long as they can.
Right. Yeah, I don't really think it's by design. I think that that it arises actually out of the hubris that we can control things.
Yeah.
Right? And so what folks are think they are designing, you know, we've talked about this myth of progress and the idea that there's a technological fix to everything, right? What they think they're designing is the solutions, right? Oh, you know, we're going to create utopia. Like, it's going to be like the Jetsons, and everybody's going to be zooming around with their cool little dog and flying cars. And then you're like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, what happened?
I want a talking dog. What's that? Astro. Okay, Roars. Astro.
Ruff, ruff. Yeah.
Okay, Roars. I'm like, oh, that's nice. You sound just like
Scooby. Should do a whole episode like Astro.
I do a pretty good Scooby-Doo impression. Do you want to hear it?
Okay, let's hear it. Of course.
Okay, Reggie. That's a pretty solid, yeah.
Yeah,
solid. We need this to keep our apocalyptic, nihilistic void at bay.
Yes, absolutely. So no, I don't really think it's by design. I think that what hubris does, and you know, and I've been talking about this with a number of folks over this last year. What is actually, to me, one of the most fascinating things about this time that we're in. And somebody on Monday, after the show was over, posted a comment about, is it time to read Isaiah again? And what's amazing to me about a lot of this is that you can actually see these biblical stories unfolding in real time, right? That, you know, a people that become deaf, don't listen, don't pay attention, don't, you know, follow wisdom, you know, societies that destroy themselves with all this very weird behavior. I mean, it's like, that's what's going on. And it really arises out of this hubris that we can control that which really is not ours to control. And so, you know, and so many of the folks that are lifting up different indigenous teachers from around the world, they're all having that same message, right? Like, look, you've forgotten that you're part of an ecosystem, and not just a physical ecosystem, but a spiritual ecosystem. And so everything is really out of whack, and that's not good.
Catherine writes, you know, I've been seeing you post about this. My brother and his wife are marine biology nerds who live on a small boat on the Pacific. They talk about loving and being a part of a deeply wounded ecology. They're currently sailing toward Baja and just ran into a bunch of feeding humpback whales. Absolute wonder amidst the terror of systems collapse.
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And so that's the other part of this, is that just as the apocalypse and the negative things kind of creep up, mm-hmm. right? They're also in the midst of that are wonderful things. Right. And, you know, and in some ways, this is, you know, this is the Julian of Norwich phenomenon, right? That so here she is living in this city, bricked into a little room. Basically, you know, half the city is dying literally outside of her window. And she's having these visions of wholeness and goodness and all will be well, right? And this is very kind of both stunning and confusing to her, right? But I think this is the mix of kind of what real apocalypse is like, is that right? You have the deep wounds of the ecology, and you still have the amazing beauty and wonder of the ecology. I mean, I went out last night to watch the moonrise. I don't know how many of you sort of intentionally went and saw the moonrise last night. It was fucking amazing. You know, and I'm standing on this bridge. I went down to the Minnesota River And there's this old Cedar Avenue bridge over the wetlands down there, and you just get a great view of the eastern horizon from there. And first of all, I was the only person there watching the moonrise, which I thought was just kind of interesting in and of itself. But, you know, this giant orb of light comes up over the horizon. I mean, this thing was so bright. It was, yeah, it was spectacular, right? And that was a very holy, powerful moment. And it was great. And it didn't matter that the apocalypse was going on. It was super cool and really fun.
Elisa's bummed out about the Jetsons closet. Rapture me now. Okay, Risa. CK writes, the best TV show is Nostradamus. I remember watching that. And future predictions of the apocalypse and who would be the Antichrist. How he predicted Hitler.
I never watched the TV show about Nostradamus.
I feel like there's a
Nostradamus was so popular for a while. That was hilarious.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've heard them. The good old Nostra brought up. Norman points out that apocalypse can have two meanings. The lesser known just means unveiling, not disaster or upheaval. Right. Yeah, and that's the thing is, I mean, this gets to the Gillian of Norwich thing. I mean, the book of the revelation of to John is basically that same scenario. Mm-hmm. He's in exile on this island, or it's attributed to someone who's on, like, you know, John on the Isle of Patmos. He's seen things
go some really good mushrooms.
Yeah, he sees things go to shit, like in his life, and he's sitting there and he sees the heavens open up and God bringing down empire, making things all right. Mm-hmm. All shall be well. And to me, that's kind of the moment we're in now, too. It's like we're seeing things go to shit, and the revelation is twofold. One is we need to see what's happening in our world as it is. And this is where, you know, Dan and I will talk about contemplative stuff as a way of perceiving reality. Mm-hmm. But then it gives us the opportunity to fundamentally change our relationships with ourselves, each other, God, the land, in a way that all things can be well as we participate in this kingdom of God that's always at hand.
Right.
You know, that's kind of the hope. And so, like, is that a foregone conclusion? No, it's an article of faith, but it requires us living in harmony with the giver of life. I mean, that's kind of the spot we're at.
Yeah. You know, go ahead.
Oh. I don't know. Something's fishy about Nostradamus.
Nostradamus.
Yeah, something smells off about that guy.
Yeah, I don't know.
That pun is that was some reaching for that one.
I think Nostradamus probably was just fake.
How dare you?
I know.
It's a lot of fun.
That's my reverse prediction.
Medieval apocalyptic prophetic texts or compilations of the lesser demons, all that shit from like Italy, you know, in the 1400s. That's just fascinating and fun, but I don't really.
Oh, it is. It's super fun. It's really hilarious.
I shall invoke the third lesser demon of the fourth quadrant of hell, known as Beelzecor. He shall give me his truth. Nostradamus, prediction 4, paragraph 13. That's how the Nostradamus documentary went on. They'd have some old crone, like old man voice reading his predictions, and like, was he predicting Jeff Bezos? We'll find out after the break.
That's right. Yeah, because of course Nostradamus would have commercials during his visions.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
just gotta eat. the series catching up. I'm assuming you're joining later on. From the jump, that's good.
So, you know, another thing, just an example of what you were just highlighting there, what we were talking about is, you know, this cohort with the spiritual direction program that we're doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like the most fun that I've had in a while. And this is an incredible group of people. And, you know, no way that we could have gotten them together any other way. It wasn't like, hey, come over for a party or something.
Yeah.
Especially for Andrew, who's in Australia. But You know, and I think that in some ways, when I look at this and experience this engagement with folks and what people are talking about and sharing with each other and coming together as community at this time, I'm like, you know, this is as good as it gets, right? Like, this is really this amazing thing and moment and source of support and source of wisdom and enthusiasm and excitement, right? I mean, even in the midst of people going like, what the fuck, Ash assigned us something we can't understand.
Hypothetically speaking, I feel like we're being good teacher, bad teacher in a little bit. Dan said he didn't have to read anything. Come here.
And yeah, so I see this as, and I see this both the program, like what led us to create this, but then also people coming and the engagement as a direct result of the apocalypse that's happening. You know, the two are very much interconnected. And so to me, this is another example. And I talk in my recent book about problems and solutions arising together in ecosystems. And I think that that's very much the case. And this to me is where the spiritual life is so helpful and powerful, because it keeps you from being totally absorbed in that nihilistic space. And because, yeah, if you go there for, you know, super long periods of time, it's just really unpleasant and it just seems hopeless.
Yeah, this is the challenging thing, though, like, I think a lot of people don't get the line between nihilism and sort of what I would consider contemplative realism, maybe. I don't know if those two words ever get put together very often, is a thin one.
Yeah.
And yeah, because there is this sort of like this idea of indifference or detachment, and there's different ways, and those aren't all always the same term, but they kind of have they're definitely overlapping ideas you see in these different traditions that are almost the same term. There's different nuances, mm-hmm. I think. But this idea of like, I'm going to be completely invested and compassionate about what I'm seeing before me, but without any feeling of control of the outcomes. So that anything that my relationship with the possibility of the future is one of faith, gentleness, and hope without controlling it. And that is still like, it's like, well, I don't know. It all could go to shit. I have no way of controlling that.
Right.
And that's just almost nihilism there.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be, because there's a hope. No. That's the thing. Like, and there's even a recognition that it might be a dumb hope. But what's better than it's better than the alternative. All shall be well.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Jeff. Right. Yeah. Fuck you, Jeff. This is an interesting question. The real tension, Scott brings up, is the real tension in Christianity then traditions that see apocalypse as an ongoing unveiling, the kingdom of God ever breaking in, and those that wait and hope for a literal end of the world? Seems that makes a difference to what kind of upheaval we look and pray for. I mean, I wouldn't say necessarily but it's definitely a big one.
Yeah,
it ties into some very similar interlocking ones, like conversion. Is the conversion in itself an individual upheaval for one person, another, a different person, type of person altogether? Or is it a continual conversion? I mean, that's a similar idea, and I feel like those are two postures.
Well, and it's very much connected to how we look at and understand time, right? And so that as the West dug in more and more to this very linear view of time with discrete moments that begin and end, right? You then have this idea of apocalypse as something, well, it's just a moment that happens on this linear flow of time, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, many, many cultures, and in some ways a much better way of talking about time, are in terms of cycles and in terms of, you know, death and rebirth and in terms of seasons, right? And so where time is much more this circular sort of experience, right? So then something like an apocalypse or something like some kind of big radical change is something that happens over and over and over again, maybe with greater depth, maybe with greater intensity, maybe with, you know, different technologies or whatever. And so then something like some kind of transformational experience like an apocalypse is not something that happens once at a discrete moment and, you know, kind of one and done. It's much more repetitive and ongoing.
Ellen, one of my shower thoughts is, what if by burning fossil fuels, we are setting free the spirits of dinosaurs who had been laid to rest in an unsettled way, and they are wreaking havoc on our iteration of history?
I like that a lot.
I'm okay with the spirits of dinosaurs fucking us up.
Yeah.
I can think of a few ways of going out that are more majestic than that. Yeah. Jesus coming back on the back of a spirit dinosaur.
Bronto Jesus.
Yay. Catherine writes,
I need to draw that.
A friend was telling us how absolutely slay they think some traditional British games are, i.e. snooker. And sometimes I think our apocalypse is being driven by rich people indifferently playing the global economy like a giant nonsense game, because that is how they think the world works. Mm. And there's something to that. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had an actual conversation with a super rich person about this sort of thing. Well, or anything actually, but you see that often portrayed like in movies or shows or stories. So I have to assume there's some level of truth to that, right? That you know, and actually a friend of mine who did rub elbows once with a very wealthy person talked about that experience of going to this event and where basically they had invited all of these supposedly spiritual people to this event to meet them and talk to them. And so she went to this thing because somehow she was connected to one of these folks. And she said what was horrifying to her was how obvious it was that sort of the whole thing was a joke. And like they were just like these little trinkets that they'd invited over for the night. Like, oh, isn't it fun? Like, let's look at these funny little spiritual people in the zoo now. And yeah, and they just have this sense that it is this ridiculous game. And yeah, because they've got billions of dollars, they're always going to win. And, you know, it's like sometimes in some shows, you'll see, you know, the absurdity of like the French court where they're just doing all this stupid stuff because they're so bored because they've done everything else, right? And, you know, so all that's left is to like race ducks or throw tomatoes at each other or something. Weird like that. So I think there's something to that. Yeah.
Ellen asks, indifference is also similar to Stoicism, right? I'm not up on Stoic philosophy enough to answer that intelligently.
Yeah, I mean, the Stoics definitely have this idea of indifference as part of their philosophical writings. Yeah, absolutely.
I would imagine it's for them, it's not necessarily tied to any sort of mysticism the way it would often be in like the spiritual
tradition. Well, yeah, I mean, they would see it as a sort of mysticism, but it's not as directly connected to, you know, a monotheistic deity. It's more connected to this general sense of the experience of the natural world and kind of how to live the best life.
Gotcha. Little bit of Dr. Who humor, wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Quite. And Sirius writes, apocalypse is a collective unveiling.
Yeah, it's certainly a collective experience, right? Within, you know, and one of the things we were talking about on Monday was how what what we're entering into are these apocalyptic moments that are now worldwide, right? That, but yeah, it is a collective. And, you know, Ash, you brought up John of Patmos a couple times. And right, and in that case, it was the collective of the Roman Empire. You know, people were talking about the destruction of the temple, right, as this apocalyptic moment and this collective unveiling for the Hebrew peoples. So, yeah, it's definitely plays out in a collective, although certainly individuals experience their own world sort of ending or being unveiled in different ways. But
you know, I don't know if you slightly stumbled over your words or I just heard it, but I could have sworn you said apocalyptic. And that is like, and I'm like thinking there's got to be a goth brand of makeup where they sell apocalyptic. So I want someone to find that out for me.
Okay. Yeah, I must. That was again, inadvertent.
I mean, again, themes collide.
Themes collide. Oh, yeah. I could totally see a marketing campaign for that.
I want to be a spokesperson. It could be like, you know, trans feminine makeup line for religiously minded folks. And our first product could be apocalyptic. There we go.
Apocalyptic. Yeah, we'd have to glorious. All the other funny names.
Reveal the inner right. You, apocalyptic.
There you go. Oh my gosh. Quick, trademark that before somebody steals.
Bring the patriarchies, the world of the patriarchy to its knees. Apocalyptic. Anyways, Neil writes, have you said anything yet about the difference between apocalyptic literature and prophetic literature? There are too often gets conflated and it creates issues. I mean, that's a big thing. We haven't really talked about it.
Yeah. No, we haven't talked about it, but that would be maybe a great thing to talk about on Friday.
Yeah, because we're past time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gosh, Lisa knows the place where we can get apocalyptic.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, the issue of I want to talk about prophetic in relationship to apocalyptic literature, which is a type of literature, but then prophetic movements and apocalyptic mystical movements. Those are some overlap there. And I think people tend to want to throw everything apocalyptic under the bus. And some of the most interesting religious movements were apocalyptic, and it wasn't all funny in the same way that we think of fundies today.
Yeah. So,
apocalyptic, okay. Uncover Girl.
Uncover Girl. There we go.
Oh, that's well done.
Victoria thinks it's already a brand name.
I mean, I gotta imagine it is, but I hope it's. I can't imagine me not being disappointed unless there's like.
Can't you just see CK and Victoria being the spokespeople for that?
For apocalyptic.
Just some of their outfits and get-ups.
Yeah, they're definitely a well-dressed family as a whole who embraces creativity. So
yeah.
I want to borrow some of your apocalyptic. Oh, band name.
Oh, a band name.
I just misread that. Yeah, you're right. You said band name the first time. That's even better. I want to know what style they have. It's just a world here. It's a whole new world for me. Well, I mean, we start all right, we have to deal with the copyright unless we pay them handsomely. Yeah. They could be a cover band.
A cover band for Uncover Girl.
Yeah. Well, okay. Speaking of apocalypse, we need to end this episode. we'll be back on Friday to talk about apocalyptic, prophetic movements and forms of literature and what all that means.
For fascism
Friday.
All right. Great to see and hear from you all.
See you next time.